Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, folks.
Hello, my loves.
This week... Holy smokes, we're so excited. We are going to throw to a conversation that we had with none other than Maitland Ward.
I had butterflies going into this conversation.
If you're not familiar, Maitland Ward is an American actress and model. She made her acting debut as Jessica Forrester on CBS's soap opera, The Bold and the Beautiful. Ask your parents about it. And then she went on from there to also star as Rachel McGuire on the ABC sitcom Boy Meets World.
I cannot even believe that. Right?
But why? Why is Maitland on the podcast today? Well, she retired from mainstream acting in 2007 and then, fast forward to 2019, began performing in pornographic films. And not only did she start... performing in pornographic films, she went on to perform in tons of them and just swept the fucking AVN Awards in 2020 and 2021, the XBiz Awards in 2020, 2021, and this year in 2022. Maitland is a really good porn star, and she came on the show to talk to us all about the transition of being a Hollywood actress to a Hollywood... would you call that a starlet?
Star?
A starlet?
I don't know if we're using starlet anymore.
Oh, yeah? Is that bad?
I don't know. I like it.
Well,
but they usually end up getting
that.
I only listen to true crime. They usually, starlets usually end up in a bad situation.
They do end up in a body bag, yeah. Maitland was a fucking phenomenal guest. We hope you enjoy this conversation. We had so much fun with her. And thanks for tuning in, folks. We will leave you with this conversation, and we will see you on the other side.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I always get super excited when we get to speak to people who work in the industry, we're joined today by Maitland Ward, which I need to contain my excitement. So Brian, I'm going to pass it to you.
Oh no!
to give a little bit of an intro here. Actually, you know what? No, fuck that, Maitland. I'm going to pass it to you. I would love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
I get to give my own introduction? That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, please, please, for the love of God.
What should I say? I am
all of it. Say everything.
Everything. Okay. Well, you may have known her from her work on Boy Meets World back in the day, but now she's a porn star. And she's written a book. And from the book will explain everything that came from Boy Meets World to becoming a porn star.
Oh my goodness. I cannot wait. So I want to put it out there. The book is called Rated X. It's Maitland's memoir that is dropping on September 6th.
Right around the corner.
Maitland, first of all, thank you. We're elated to have you on the show.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
Big fans over here. And I gotta say, we've had a couple of people from the porn industry come on the show, and I'm always so stoked to speak to them, because it's just highly fascinating. You know, a world where it's not very often you get to speak to a porn star, and so that's one of my favorite parts about doing the show is being able to do so. But you have such a fucking fascinating career trajectory. And I would love to kind of that's where I want to start. Like, I'd love to dive into what was the trajectory of your career? How did you find yourself where you are now? And I guess like going all the way back to like as an aspiring actress when you were younger. Bridie and I both met at theater school, and we're both actors. And so like getting to speak to fellow actors was really fun. But I've also had this like fantasy in my mind of like one day maybe being like doing adult work.
Fuck yeah.
You know?
So
now I'm like, now I'm talking to the person who's done it all, and I'm going, give me your tips. How do we do it? So take us back to the beginning. How did you get into acting in the very beginning?
Oh, well, I always loved acting when I was very little. Like as a child, I would like to make movies with my friends and stuff. We'd play Star Wars. I was very into that, and I was Princess Leia, and of course, and my dog, my Springer Spaniel Kate, was Chewy because she had brown ears and hair and fur, and she was the best for the part. But I just love the outlet that acting and performing gave me. So, because I was always a very good girl, I followed the rules, I got good grades, I was very sweet and everything, but I felt like I needed an outlet for some things I was feeling or things I wanted to do. And I really felt characters really gave me that outlet. And I discovered that from very young. And I took acting classes in my neighborhood and did community stuff and plays and things. And then it really wasn't until my braces came off and I was, 15, 16, heading to, first of all, I have to say, preface this by, I loved soap operas growing up. I was a big soap opera fan. It was a big fantasy world for me. And so I saw that there was going to be a casting like workshop with the casting director for The Bold and the Beautiful. And I was like, oh, we'll take a soap opera casting thing. And at the end of the whole thing, which I had a fantasy that there's going to be all these hunk guys in there, and I was going to be just like the girls on the soap, but it was mainly actors. It was like, and they were all older than me, like a lot older than me in their 30s.
How old were you at this time?
Like 15, 16 about.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was great. And it was fun working with the actors and stuff. And at the end of the workshop, the casting director asked me to try out for the show on Bold and Beautiful. So I was like blown away.
Wow. That's the best case scenario.
I got the show on my second audition. So I really landed fast in, and I had a contract role in the show and everything. So I landed into the world of soap operas in sort of a fairy tale way, but then, I discovered what behind the scenes of Hollywood slowly was along the way. Although I had most of the majority of the people on and working on Bold and Beautiful are amazing. Like I still have such great friendships from it, but there were a few people along the way that I talk about in the book that, made things kind of difficult for me growing into my womanhood and finding myself and my sexuality and who I was as a person. But so I was a very good girl, and I wanted to like hide parts of myself that I thought were bad, or anything sexual was like too taboo for me to talk about and stuff. So as we progress in Hollywood, I did get a little bit sexier feeling, because I was when I was on the soap opera, I was a very virginal, young, like everything bad happened to character. Like my mom was having sex with my boyfriend when I was in a diabetic coma. And then I almost got set on fire at a bikini bar because my rapist put gasoline on me.
This is,
yeah, so just those kinds of
soap operas as well. I love soap operas. I feel like I started watching them when I was like 11 years old. It was like my first summer vacation.
Hold on. Was this in Bold and the Beautiful?
Oh, it's in Bold and Beautiful.
Yes. Holy shit. My mom was like a Bold and Beautiful fan. And I was like, oh, that sounds so boring. What you just said sounds like the most fascinating storyline I've ever heard.
It was over the course of 2.5 years or whatever. So,
I watched Passions growing up, and I like Passions because there was a talking doll, and I like paranormal shit. Timmy was the shit. Yes. But fuck, yeah. I didn't know Bold and the Beautiful was so. That's salacious.
It is.
I know. And my rapist actually originally tried to poke holes in the condom and try to trick me into sex to get my family's money.
Oh my God.
and the funny thing is, he's like the guy who played him is like one of my dear, dear friends to this day.
Oh my goodness.
And the one who played my chivalrous boyfriend is the one that fucked with my head. So,
Oh no.
The actual behind the scenes soap opera. As someone who aspired to be an actor as a 15, 16 year old girl on a tiny island, the fact that you looking, talking to you right now and knowing that you were of that age in LA and having these opportunities, but also not being like really open or like sort of like hiding your own sexuality and coming of age within the context of working for a soap opera, like, were you working? Like, were you still going to school? Did you have?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a really interesting thing because I was going to school like several days a week, and then I had a tutor on the set the other days. And so I really, in that regard, I lived the best of both worlds. It was it was strange, but I loved, hey, I just come into school and then I just go into, have my tutor who was great. He was a fantastic older man who used to be a football coach in high school. And he decided to, do studio tutoring because he didn't want to like just watch the grass grow all the time when he's in retirement. His wife kind of made him do it too. But it was a surreal experience because I was kind of a nerdy drama geek before I got the show. And then I think everyone was pretty much surprised that I was going to be starring on a soap opera at school because I didn't seem like that kind of person, even though I did all the plays and all the drama stuff. But I mean, I was a very shy, sheltered kind of individual. But I mean, that did get me out of my shell a lot, but I still was trying to hide parts of myself. And I was interested in my sexual discovery and like finding myself. And I just felt like I had to hide and be just this virginal, innocent person because that's who people liked of me. And it went along the way, like going on to Boy Meets World and other projects. I was, on the soap, I was the blonde and I cut my hair off. There's a whole story to that and became a redhead. And the rest is history in that regard. But when I got on Boy Meets World, it was funny because I was used as more of a sexual type person. I was the most sexualized person, I think, on the show.
Right.
Because, so it was interesting, that journey. But to porn, man, it was a long, long time of self-discovery, of really, coming to terms with who I was as a person and my sexuality and what I wanted to do. And I had to give up the fucks along the way. No fucks at the end. But yeah, it was decades from Boy Meets World to when I first came into porn and first started creating.
Content. So you retired from acting in 2007 and didn't begin performing in porn until 2019, which is quite a gap.
Basically I just kept getting frustrated for many years after Boy Meets World and after White Chicks and stuff that I was so typecast in everything that I did and nobody would allow me to play anything different than what would they see me before. But then they wouldn't even cast me for those kind of roles because you were on Boy Meets World or we know you from these things. So it was very disheartening also for as me as an actress. When I was young, I loved acting as an outlet for different kinds of characters and nobody was like allowing me to do the things that I wanted to do. So eventually along the way, well, I did get married and I moved to New York to, New York was like a breath of fresh air for me because I was away from the Hollywood, you know, system and, and everybody in Hollywood. And it was a real time for me to have a lot of time for self-discovery and stuff. And that's when I really started getting into erotic fiction. And, you know, the ironic thing about it is, once I got married, that's when I really started exploring my sexuality in all realms. Yeah. And I started writing a lot and writing out sexual stories and erotic things. And then eventually I did come back to LA and I studied screenwriting for 2 years at UCLA. And that's really where I was going to do. I thought, oh, I'm going to write a script maybe for myself or for somebody else, or just, I really wanted to write and stuff. And I didn't expect to do, I guess, acting again, or I didn't think about that. Like, I didn't think that might be a possibility, but then Girl Meets World, the spinoff to Boy Meets World came around, and the attention, like the cast got from that was pretty mind blowing. Cause we, at the time when we filmed Boy Meets World, I don't think we fully conceptualized how popular it was or how much it meant to people.
Huge.
Growing up.
Yeah. Yeah,
like we didn't have the internet back then like we do now. Like, we didn't have Twitter and stuff, and there was no social media like that. So we couldn't like really hear from the audience. But once the renewed interest came back, we heard from everybody. People were so excited about the show and telling us how much it meant to them. And it was really cool. It was awesome, but it was a little rattling for me too, because I had tried to move away from that into different kinds of things, like what I was doing. And to be cast back in the spotlight as that character was just a little bit rattling to be back there. But it was also fun. I enjoyed it. But then I made a decision, like, especially because the social media was just really starting to boom and stuff when Girl Meets World came on. I was like, I don't care. I'm just going to put on my social media, like the things that I want to do and the things that, you know, I feel I like. I would come a bit of an exhibitionist and I discovered that about myself. I mean, so I had done a lot of, I began to do a lot of like setups and stuff with the bikini setups and cosplay. I was big into that. And then I found out I could have like a career with it. I thought it was just fun before, but, so I was able to really establish myself as that. And I know I had all sorts of publicists and people in Hollywood, producers, Disney people say, oh, you can't do this. You can't be sexy like this. You're going to get in trouble. You're going to offend people and nobody wants to see you like this. I had a publicist say straight to my face in a way that he thought was, you know, helpful. You know, if you keep posting like this, it's going to ruin you. If they want sexy, they'll get somebody 25. You'll never make a dime at this.
Oh, wow.
He thought he was being Simon Cowell or something to me.
Yeah. Was this specific to like the cosplay type stuff, or it was just a blend of everything? Just like cosplay and feeling yourself, like those types of posts.
I did a lot of cosplay just because that's what I liked. And eventually I teamed up with a photographer who had a lot of authentic cosplay pieces, which was so cool. And we did photo shoots and stuff, and that went really wild in the press and on social media and stuff. And then also, but then I did like sexy setups and I did funny things. I did just like, you know, like I take a day, like National Kiwi Day or whatever it was, and do something funny and like a little setup, and people would really respond to that. I got really popular on Snapchat I was just like doing goofy things, sexy things. And then I started getting in trouble a lot because they started seeing like, you might have a shadow of your nipple on there. That we see when they took down my stuff. And that's really over the course of like when I started with Girl Meets World around the time when the interest was renewed to when I actually started filming my own sexual content. I did that before I went into professional porn.
Yeah.
It was some years. I really was just doing it for fun. And then I did Comic-Cons and all that stuff, but I was really just doing it authentically for fun. And I was showing people my life and I was getting more followers. And I know Disney and Michael Jacobs, executive producer and all that, did not like that I was changing this image. But at this point I was like, forget it. I want to do my own thing. And that really led to a lot of stuff for me. That's what led to we're on the precipice of the porn.
Yeah. I have so many questions hearing all that. I guess one that which is something that we come back to oftentimes in our conversations with guests on the show. And we like to use the term sexual debut as opposed to like losing your virginity. There's just something more, a little more powerful about like your sexual debut. I'm curious about, and if it's okay to ask, like what did your, as someone who was, you know, holding back from like exploring your sexuality as a young, a child, who was thrust into like the acting world and covering these things in the scenes that you were doing that were like quite adult. And then it like, you know, from that moment forward, coming into your sexual debut, like what was that experience like? And did the things that you were like diving into on, you know, Bold and the Beautiful, like as an actor who's like touching on these really heavy things in the world of like adult themes, how much of that sort of, I guess, kind of spilled over to your like your worldview on what it meant to be a sexual being, and when you came into your like sexual debut, what was that experience actually like for you?
Well, I was so much older when I did my sexual debut on public, but like
debut.
But when I was younger, it was a very there was a time in the late 90s and early 2000s. It was girls were like expected to really be like sexy or sexual, and there were certain images of women that you felt you needed to live up to. And I was always, you know, I didn't feel good enough or confident enough or whatever. And then you were also expected to be very virginal. And I was cast much in that role. I mean, even when I was on Boy Meets World, I was highly sexualized. If you look back on the shows, I mean, they went through my panties, they went through my diary, and this was Corey and Sean, but they just invaded my space and privacy. We were supposed to forgive them because they were cute and they were sweet and they, you know, and everybody kind of just apologized for it. And they stole like dirty pictures and put them in the student union, like of me, which I don't know where they found them. They must've been going through my drawers more. So, there was all these and I was always the one dancing around in the lingerie and like, you know, doing all this stuff. But if I would do anything like that in my personal life, I would be reprimanded for that. Like you cannot do anything to tarnish your image, and that tarnishing my image is wearing a crop top or something.
Yeah.
So, but on the show, it was okay. It was okay to dance in lingerie on the show as long as it was in that environment and under the control of, you know, production and stuff.
It must have been really freeing. I can imagine. Yeah. As I feel like I had the similar expectations placed on me to, you know, be good, get the good grades, like don't fuck it up for your four little sisters was like the big, you know, big message. Right. But, you know, from my earliest like memory of like turning 18 and leaving home, I remember being like, I gotta go see if I can get a job in a strip club. Like wanted to express that sexual side of myself that was just never, not only was it never like invited, it was always more like that's just something you have to keep to yourself forever. But I can't even imagine what that would have been like, especially like I imagine being a teenager on a show of teenagers to be like summer camp, no adults around. Got like, I can't remember who, I think it's Will Friedle and Ryder Strong. I don't know because I had them. It was pinups on my bedroom as a teenage girl. I would have just been like, huh, let me loose on this fucking cast.
I have to say, the cast, the very nice cast. We weren't a scandalous bunch in real life, really. Yeah. I mean, normal teen things. Yeah, like summer camp, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, it was fun. I mean, yeah, that's a good way to, we were like a family. I mean, there's issues with family. There's, you know, it's complicated on a lot of levels, especially like our executive producer was like the father figure of everybody. So fathers and kids sometimes have issues, you know, complicated situation. But it really was so many years that I had to just really delve into my truth and my, it just who I was as a person and sexually. I was not, yeah, I was hiding a lot about sexuality for many, many, many years. And it's ironic that when I got married, that's when I started exploring. So it's funny that, that I started discovering so much about myself and stuff. So
what is it about, that exploration coming at the time of after getting married? Was there something in the marriage that, that sort of sparked that interest in diving more into your sexuality?
You know what? I always say it wasn't like that. I was sparking kind of my own sexuality. It did also have to do with the move to New York and away from like what I had known and been, but I felt like I had a strong anchor at home and I could go out and I could explore myself. And I wasn't shooting porn or anything then, but I could explore myself in ways, and I was, working out fantasies, and I just felt like I had a really strong place at home. And, but yeah, people always think, oh, he must get something out of it. He must get off on this because you're doing this. And I'm like, why would that be the case? I am doing it for me. I mean, that's like negating what I'm doing because I would only be doing it for a man.
Yeah.
Not that if you have that kind of, kink, that's fine.
But, yeah, totally. Yeah.
But sometimes it can be for yourself.
Right. That's what I mean. It doesn't, like, the assumption is if you're a woman, it would have to be for your husband enjoyment off of it.
Yeah.
Turn Me On podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So one of the other things that I love asking people who decide to kind of cross over into that career of like doing adult entertainment work is, and of course, the reason I ask this question is because for myself, not being in that position, I can imagine that like taking the first step to like legitimately doing it is, it feels like, at least from this side of it, it feels like it would be kind of a leap of faith. I know that like, obviously in your case, there is this like long period of time where it's like one step after the other step after the other step. And eventually you start to like dip your toes in. But what was the very, very first, like, okay, I'm going to make the decision to approach this with like an intention of making this a career. What was that experience like for you?
The experience, well, doing that, it started off with the fact that when I was doing my sexy Snapchats and Instagrams and I started getting kicked off and all that stuff, because of my nipple photos and whatever, I started to make content and my fans were like, well, you should make content like, I was thinking at the time, nudie pictures or like, sexy cosplay picture, Playboy-esque very much type stuff. But I was like, I don't know if anybody's going to want to buy them. I mean, is that like, maybe I can make a little extra money to put into, photos and stuff. And so I can be free with how to express myself. So I started a Patreon page, which is Patreon, where they are patrons of your art and stuff. So I started it one night and I was just like, oh, I'm just going to set this up, but I'm not going to tell anybody yet. I don't know if I'm going to do this. Well, and when I set it up the next morning, I had 20 people subscribed and I was like, I hadn't said anything yet. And then, so I said, I went on social media and I said, okay, here I have a Patreon page if you want to go on. And by the week's end, I had like 2,800 subscribers. I was the number one adult person on there. And then it kind of snowballed from there, because then I would be like, oh, let's do these new photo sets, or maybe I should do some stuff with girls and stuff. It's funny because several years before, I think like about 4 years before, or 3 years before, I forget what year exactly it was, but in that time I did an International Kiss a Ginger Day photo shoot, which is a day in January, and I needed a ginger to kiss. So for a little cute setup, we were going to do a slumber party kind of, you know, little thing. And I had a friend who recommended Elle Alexandra, who was a lesbian porn star at the time, redhead, beautiful, cute thing. And she was a fan of Boy Meets World and stuff. So she thought it'd be fun. So we did the little setup and we had a whole thing. But by the end of it, we were naked and doing some pretty erotic photos that didn't get released till Patreon kicked off. But she said at that time, she goes, you were going to do something in the adult business. And I was like, no, I don't know. This is just fun. And I like girls and it's good. But she's like, no, I promise you. And she was right. And I invited her back to shoot a full, like,
oh, wow,
a couple scenes and stuff that we did. And then I started doing more girl stuff. And then it came to the point where I was, you know, writing out fantasies and stories and scripts and stuff. And they included men and multiple men and different scenarios. But I was never going to approach like my husband with this to say, I'm going to do this. He's the one who actually recognized this in me and brought it up, that he thought I needed to do this for myself. I needed, because I kept having these scenarios that couldn't exactly be fulfilled in a marital bedroom and stuff. I mean, dungeons and things, all sorts of different scenarios with multiple guys and girls and everything. And so we really started out with my content creation. We started making, you know, we reached out, we did a blowjob first with another guy who was amazing. and it was, I found him through all like porn stars that my, it all stemmed really from Elle, but then I met different porn stars along the way, girl ones. And they would, I got recommended, two men to work with who were amazing, amazing porn stars who were long in the business. They were over a decade in the business. And so they really taught me a lot. We were testing it out with this blowjob and it went really well. It went really well. It was, the blowjob did too. But I mean, the time, it was great. If it would have been something different, or if it would have not happened exactly the way that it did, maybe I would have been not done this. But it was a good experience and we felt good about it. So then we were like, okay, am I ready to do it with another man fully, like full on in a hotel room and all this? And so we finally came to this point, and I talk a lot about that, how we got there in the book. And so I thought, I remember when we were going for it to do the thing, I loved it. And not just the sex, I loved the performance of it. And later on, I asked my co-star how he remembered that first time, because it was my first time on camera to do something like that. And he said, you weren't nervous. And he knew that. He thought I'd be more nervous. And I wasn't. I was fine with my husband. We were fine. We thought it might be weird, and it wasn't. Then I just started producing content with them actually for like a year and a half or something.
With the same core group of people?
Yeah.
Like that you had been working with? Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. I had two guys, Danny Mountain and Isaiah Maxwell. And we worked, we just did every month, like different, you know, scenes and stuff.
Coming back to that first blowjob scene, and you were saying that like it went really well. Mm-hmm. What made it go really well? Like what were the experience that made you come out of that going, you know what? Like that was a good experience. That was a fun thing to do. That worked out well. Like Like what sets that apart from it being like a fucking shitty experience?
Well, I think first of all, my co-star, my content co-star, mm-hmm. he was such a professional and such a gentleman and just really knows how to handle a situation. Like there was so much consent and talk and just, it was just, I felt safe and comfortable, and it was way better than a lot of mainstream things I've done where I haven't felt comfortable or whatever. But it was just first that part of it. I was very safe. He was great with my husband. They were talking about just whatever sports and movies and stuff ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then when I did it, I was so impressed with myself that I just liked doing it. And I was impressed that I could do it like a porn star.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, because if I got really nervous on camera or something, I didn't think I was going to, but I really went into it with my all.
Yeah.
And I was proud of myself and I felt a sense of accomplishment because this guy is very large. And so taking him down my throat, I knew I was meant to be.
You got something, kid. You got something. I don't know.
Everywhere I was a superstar.
In terms of like a technical question here, when it comes to like the discussion that you're having with like a scene partner, obviously they're, you know, to make something that to go into an experience that is a positive experience, I would assume that there's a lot of discussion before the scene starts. But in the midst of the scene, how much room is there for like conversation or sort of like, I guess like moments for like in injecting some like, you know, inquiry for consent or things like that. Or like once the scene starts, it's kind of like, you know, you're just keeping in mind what was discussed and you're trying to get right through to the other end without any kind of cuts.
You are trying to go right through the whole way. You really are. But there are stops and starts sometimes like that happen. Sometimes people get overheated. That's a big one. Sorry. That's a big one where they're, sweating and, you know, you need a moment just to take some water and to, because we're in a lot of acrobatic situations. But for the most part, we try to go all the way through until the pop. And the pop is what you'd expect it to be.
Yeah.
But because then you want to get the shot right. You have to get it on camera right. Because sometimes you can miss, the camera can miss it and stuff. And that's like the most important kind of part of the climax. So for people watching.
This is the part of talking to people in the porn industry that I love the most is like the technical aspects of it. The things that like, especially as like a cinephile, an actor, someone who's worked on sets like this. I just find this stuff so fascinating.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm really curious about is, you know, porn is like still today, shockingly, still like highly stigmatized.
Yeah.
And as someone who, and I think that I feel like this is a little bit rare, like to be able to speak to someone who's been on both ends of the spectrum in terms of working on film. So like working in, you know, like I'm assuming you were like a SAG, you know, member, like working on film sets, in Hollywood and then transitioning and working on porn sets in Hollywood. In terms of the ways that the sets were run and the ways that productions run, and the sort of the vibes that like are happening on set. What's the difference between, or have you noticed or thought about the difference between like shooting a Hollywood film or a Hollywood TV show versus shooting Hollywood porn? And like, and I ask that in wondering if there's something to that that might actually surprise people who probably have an assumption of the two sets being quite different.
Right. They're really not different. At least I've worked with like the top quality company that, you know, Vixen and deeper.com specifically. So we film everything like film quality. We have a large crew and we have like, it's very, very much the same as like filming like a more of an independent film or something. It's much more, it's very much the same. It's just the sex happens. And so I think people have this old stereotype in their head of like some old guy, you know, smoking a cigarette, watching an orgy and jerking off, or, you know, and everybody's on drugs. And that, first of all, you can't do any of that. That's really like against the law. Like before the scenes, you have to sign paperwork and go on camera signing paperwork with your IDs held to your head. And they ask you all the questions. Are you being held against your will? Are you drunk? Or are you under the influence? Are you consenting to this? And you have to sign all your paperwork and stuff. Mm. So that's a big difference than the other, you know.
Yeah, I guess you don't get that on a film.
Consent, all the testing, like STI testing and all of that. But I'd say the sets are run very similarly. I mean, we actually have mainstream people on the crew who do mainstream as well. So it's not that different. I know it would be different at another company where they use a smaller crew where there's like just a couple people or something, but still it's not what you're envisioning, like all those stereotypes from like the 70s or 90s or whenever, where they thought it was like, you know, some crazy sex drug orgy happening all the time. It is just the orgy.
It's only that part.
And also the crew is not involved. People are like, they're watching you, and are they just like jerking off all the time? I'm like, they don't care. I've seen them like, like just waiting for it to be over. So
I mean, I would love to meet a person who can successfully hold a boom mic and jerk off at the same time. That would be quite a feat.
The boom guy's like, right. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. My favorite is the guy who has to come in the middle of it. And if it's dry, they like a shiny dick, first of all.
Sure.
They like a shiny dick. So when we're actually in the middle of sex pouring the lube on, so all of a sudden you'll go, oh, I got a lube splash.
Yeah, right.
I love it. So in like film these days, it's all the rage to bring in like intimacy coordinators for like makeout scenes. Yeah, is there that person on your set, or is that generally the director's job?
It's the director's job, but it's always been a thing to have like an intimacy coordinator, because we have to talk about consent beforehand. You always get your, you know, give your list of do's and don'ts and no's and yeses. And so you talk about like positions you'll do and, you know, things you'll do. If you don't like something, you say it, and you definitely, there's boundaries there. So that's always been a thing in porn. So I think that's actually more of a newer thing in mainstream.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember like doing love scenes and stuff and things I was never like talked to. And I was only, my first one was only when I was 17 or, you know.
Yeah.
Brady, can you just explain quickly what an intimacy coordinator would like do on set for people that aren't like in the know and in the biz?
So I worked as one for an independent film once, but I know you can also, there's education you can go through to become an intimacy coordinator on a professional film set. And basically, in my experience, the role is like lots of conversation with the actors to make sure everyone's comfortable, to make sure the scene is choreographed. So like even those like hot love scenes where you're like, this looks like these two actors got carried away in the passion. It's like, actually everything's really choreographed down to like where my hand's going to end up, where, you know, if I'm going to grab your boob here, if I'm going to pull your hair here, like these are all things that we need to plan and agree to ahead of time.
It's like a stunt coordinator for love scenes.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. We don't go as hard as that. Like we know the positions, but we kind of go a little more free flow with, you know, we know where we need to end up, but you don't have to like say every single move you're making. Actually, that's what I really like about that too, is the chemistry and the fun and the moment of doing all that. But generally you know where you're going to end up, but you know, it's mostly like you just give your nose and what you don't like.
Right. Exactly. And that's important to know. Like, you know, if you're working with another performer, no matter what, you would want to know what their boundaries are in terms of.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the other things that you'd mentioned earlier when you were talking about some of your first scenes that you had done with that core group of people was like, you learned a lot, or, you know, your partner had taught you a lot. And I know that you've, you know, when it comes to like the, you know, XBiz awards or AVN awards, you've done quite well.
Yes.
and like as an avid porn, consumer, like I see porn and, you know, there's porns where I see and I go, wow, that was a very impressive performance. And then there's porn that I see and I go, a little bit lackluster. Didn't do quite as good as like maybe Maitland did. So what are some of the things that you in the very beginning in those early scenes, like what were some of those things that you learned? And then B, like what does it take to give a really solid performance in pornography?
I think, well, I learned, they taught me a lot of technical aspects too, about how scenes go and like about camera work and stuff. And I latched onto it fast because of my past in mainstream. Yeah. So I knew about cameras and performing for them and everything. But also I just learned to, you're asking like, what's something that makes a scene like great? I really think the chemistry between the performers is important. My favorite thing is when in my scenes, I do a lot of like intense, dirty talk, and I'm always, you know, doing all this stuff. And I get very passionate and very like, you know, I'm a mistressy kind of person. But when I do that, I love when somebody like gives it back to me and like we can go at each other and like kind of, you know, just give us that passion back and forth. And that makes a really good scene, is when you're on the same wavelength as your partner or partners or whatever. I always think it's like a dance partner, like, or if you were dancing together, like it's just that chemistry that where you were both giving your all in that moment and stuff. And it's like, you really have to learn to trust the other person or the people that you're working with too. So if you can trust them, you can completely let go and really give your all. I think when you're watching ones that, I think when you're watching people that are a little more timid about stuff, they are timid. So I think it's important like to have conversation ahead of time with people and to get to know them a bit and to just feel comfortable with them so you can really, you know, dive into it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like everything you're saying right now, I'm going, oh yeah, of course. Like it's no different than acting with anybody else in any other scene. You know, it's just like being present with your partner.
Yeah.
Having trust that your partner is going to deliver to you the exact amount of energy you're going to deliver back to them.
Yes.
And then let that just kind of flow. Yeah, totally.
The worst thing is whenever you do a scene with anybody or something and they're just like, they don't respond.
Okay. Okay.
You know?
So that leads me to my next question. And I'm so interested in hearing this. So I just got an Oculus Quest like in the last like 6 months, and VR porn is really fucking cool. But the amount of times I've been watching VR porn and thinking to myself, how hard is this for the performer who's not wearing the camera, who's not in the POV? So the person who is performing to the virtual reality camera, like, is it a challenge? Because like, I feel like you're just kind of fucking someone who's just kind of starfishing there. Just kind of hanging out, and you're doing all the work.
I did 2 VR scenes in my career, and I loved it because I could just go to the camera and do whatever I wanted. And some people don't like it because the girl you have to talk all the time and do everything. Like the guy is not doing it, but I really loved that aspect of it because it was a lot of fun for me because I could do all my dirty talk and sail, you know, and I got to read like some erotic story pieces and stuff that they had. And it was fun, but it's a weird thing. The guy is in this contraption with like ear things on it, sound ears.
Yeah. For like 3D audio, right? It's literally like to pick up audio on your right side, your left side. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. The ones I had were little ears actually. And then he sits in it and there's this equipment on this whole contraption that he's under. And then in the camera that's in front of him, like face wise and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's a huge contraption. I mean, it's definitely costs a lot of money to get one of those.
That's gotta be tough for him.
He can't do anything and stay sort of in the moment.
Like that's very, so fucking
I had
wild.
Great part. I had really good partners. There's certain guys that are really good at VR. Like some people just don't like it because it's just like you said, you're just sitting there.
Yeah.
But it's funny because you just have to do everything. And he can't even, he can sometimes, I think, do the hands a little bit. He can reach out like, but it's basically just his dick. And even when you're like talking to him, you're talking into the camera and you're whispering into the ears that aren't his ears. They're the ears of the,
it's like boom mics coming out of his head.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I think it's fun to watch too, if it's done well.
Yeah.
I'd love to do some cosplay one sometime, like a full on cosplay VR situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite fascinating. Like I can, you know, I can see in the next like 50 years, I could see there being quite a sort of boom in the realm of like VR pornography, because it's,
And you know, it's interesting.
It's very fascinating.
Pornography is always like the first to really do these kinds of things. Yeah, like coming up, movies will be in VR, like, you know, it'll be like, but we like to, we test things out. We're kind of, before like the mainstream will make it, like, we have to be sure it'll work, but we're like, okay, let's just try it and see. Yeah.
Porn is like the hipsters of movie technology. They're like, we've been doing that for years.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Like we knew that before. It was cool. Yeah.
Are you writing like many scripts these days? Is that mostly what you're producing, is your own writing?
I do everything too with deeper.com, which Caden Cross created, and she writes such great stuff for me. And so I do features and scenes and all that stuff. But I have written two scenes recently that I for porn for Deeper. And it was actually for Vixen Brands, some of them. But so that's been fun. I'm doing that. And I'm thinking about like another book idea about, I would love to get to erotic fiction and that kind of thing, because that was like my passion. But yeah, I'm definitely writing, and then the whole writing the memoirs really inspired me and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
To really, you know, get into the whole, my past, at the whole erotic writing and stuff.
It seems like you're just getting started. Yeah. It's so exciting. This like second chapter of your career. Right.
Well, again, folks, the book is called Rated X. It is dropping September 6th. Maitland, like I said at the beginning of this is, we were so excited to sit down and talk to you. This has been beyond what we could have expected. It's so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really, really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Great talking to you guys.
All right, there we have it, folks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation that we just had. And, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the podcast further, you can do that by leaving a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can simply rate the podcast on the Spotify mobile app. And if you want to support the podcast even further than that, which you can.
Wow.
You can go to,
so kind and thoughtful and so generous. Thoughtful,
so generous. Go to patreon.com/turnmeon. To become a patron and help us keep this podcast afloat.
Well, if you want to reach out to us, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com is always open for all of your messages. That's the best way to get in touch. If you have a question for us, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, if you have a recommendation for a guest on the show, or if you just want to send us a little love note, email, money transfer, all of that.
Sex toy.
You know, our email inbox is open to you.
That is it for this week. Until next week.
Why don't you go touch yourself?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.